Good evening, councillors, staff, ladies and gentlemen. I declare this briefing session open at 6:30 p.m. The proceedings of the briefing session are electronically recorded and a live broadcast will be provided in line with changes to the City's briefing session procedures adopted by Council on 20th of September 2022. CJ 155/09/22 refers, except for matters of a confidential nature. The guide in determining those matters of a confidential nature shall be in accordance with the Local Government Act 1995. Members of the public gallery are reminded it is a requirement under the Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013 to act in a courteous and respectful manner when in the Council Chamber. You are asked to show respect to anyone who is exercising their right to ask questions of the Council and or to deliver public statements. I ask that respect extend to such people whenever they are on city premises, while waiting for or having taken their opportunity to ask questions or to deliver a public statement. Under the local law, a person must not create a disturbance by interrupting or interfering with the orderly conduct of proceedings. This includes expressing approval or dissent, by conversing or by any other means. I would also like to remind members of the public to show proper respect to the City's elected members and staff during proceedings. The next item on the agenda is declarations of interest. Do any councillors or staff have any declarations on any item on tonight's agenda? I have before me a declaration of interest from myself, Deputy Mayor Adrian Hill, for item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review. I'm a resident with, an interest that may affect impartiality. I'm a resident within the Burns Beach SAR area and a former chairperson of Burns Beach Residents Association, and I'm also currently a member of Burns Beach Residents Association. Also on the agenda, you will see, we have before us declarations of interest from Councillor Lewis Sutton for item 13.1.1, proposed revisions to the Alfresco Activities Local Planning Policy and draft Alfresco Spaces Guidelines. It's an indirect financial interest as Councillor Hutton's family business is subject to the policy. Also, Councillor Lewis Sutton for item 13.1.6, specified area rating, council policy review, an interest that may affect impartiality. Councillor Hutton is a former member of the Burns Beach Residents Association Committee. Just one more check if there are any other elected members with declarations of interest. Councillor Ventura.
Yes, thank you. Through you, 13.1.6, impartiality on the fact that members of the SARS in Harbour Eyes are known to me.
Thank you. I'll take you doing the paperwork for that.
Just filling it in now. Thank you.
Councillors, any further declarations of interest? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. Just in relation to, 12.12, for the panel of pre-qualified suppliers, I used to work for Bonara Nurseries.
Thank you. If you can complete the paperwork for that, please. Given we've had a few of these, just a last call for elected members. Any further declarations of interest? We'll therefore move on to the next item, which is deputations. Deputation requests are to be made in writing and addressed to the Mayor. A time period of up to 15 minutes is set aside for each deputation. Deputations shall not exceed 5 persons in number, and only 3 of those persons shall be at liberty to address the elected members and to respond to questions that the elected members may have. The following deputations have been approved by the Mayor. The first one is regarding item 12.6, Mr. Kim Allen, can I call you forward, please, do your deputation?
Thank you. Good evening, Deputy Presiding Member, Councillors, Administration and members of the public. My name is Kim Allen. I reside in Reacher Place, Ocean Reef. Tonight I'm presenting a deputation on behalf of local residents from Mainsail Drive and Reacher Place in relation to a recently constructed mobile communications tower and a lack of community consultation. By way of illustration, I have included a number of slides to provide some background. I should also add that for many years I worked in strategic planning for telecommunications networks and have significant experience in this area. Next slide, please. So our council petitioned for a stop order to cease construction work on the mobile tower unfortunately failed given the timing. This petition failed because the construction is now underway and services are already operational. Next slide, please. As ratepayers, we believe it reasonable that the City of Joondalup should align with us to seek answers and possibly even revocation of previous planning decisions made. Clearly, the decisions were made by the WA Planning Commission, and only the State Lands Minister has any control over this type of decision. Our objective is to understand what the criteria were to make decisions not to consult with the community and to construct the tower in this location when many other viable options exist. Furthermore, based on this experience and decisions made, we believe that the introduction of third-party rights of appeal is important for future works within the marina precinct, where height levels are exceeded in this way, to enable appropriate appeal by the community. Next slide, please. To understand the history of this case, we need to consider what happened and why we have seen this erection, this erected with no community consultation. Under normal circumstances, engineering documents are submitted to local councils and planning authorities who comply to federal, state and local telecommunications planning policy that calls for community consultation. This didn't happen and this project proceeded regardless. Next slide, please. The project is complex. However, there's some key issues to consider. All policies relating to telecommunications infrastructure consider visual amenity, location and implication on health and whether co-location on existing structures is possible. Furthermore, under normal circumstances, the technical scope document provides a number of alternative technical candidates for consideration. ARPANSA, the Australian Radiation and Nuclear Protection Agency, make a range of recommendations relating to structure location that should be considered in relation to public health impacts. Radio frequency effects on health are considered by authorities, and electromagnetic energy measurements are taken for public awareness. Questions are raised regarding the protocols and appropriateness of this approach. Next slide, please. The Marine Precinct Area Planning Document clearly identified the maximum structural height in this area at 4 metres. It's puzzling that a 35-metre concrete monopole structure was erected when this limitation was clearly stated. Next slide, please. In the WAPC Improvement Scheme document, the Marine Precinct Area is excluded, Section D, from the construction of telecommunications infrastructure. How was this overridden? Next slide, please. Technical scope documents are normally submitted by telecoms proponents, and the details are shared in community consultation as legislated by policy. In this case, local residents had to submit FOI requests to gain access to this document that was still heavily redacted. Once again, not a usual situation. Next slide, please. In the document, a photo montage on the left was used to illustrate the likely visual impact of the structure. Clearly, when contrasted with what has been installed, the original photo montage understates the visual impact significantly. Next slide, please. Clearly, from all directions, this growing structure is highly visible. Next slide. When proponents are considering options to provide adequate and sustainable mobile coverage, they should consider alternative candidate sites. In this case, there are a number of options to consider, all of which have lesser impact in all areas. Next slide, please. Probably the most suitable and pre-existing structure is the Department of Transport Navigation Pole. Even if it had to be structurally replaced, its elevation and distance from homes would have rendered it an excellent site to achieve maximum coverage with minimal impact. Next slide. The pole is higher in elevation than the new monopole and has been in situ for over 25 years. People have lived with it, and it's a state government-owned asset. Next slide, please. There are also a number of other locations that could have been selected, including low-profile towers on the southern Scarp area, marked with the E on the top right-hand corner. Next slide, please. Finally, the Whitford Sea Rescue Building continues to be promoted with a large telecommunications tower on the roof. It's therefore puzzling that this wasn't even considered. Next slide, please. Understanding the monitoring of radio frequency emissions and having confidence in the monitoring approach is very important to the community. Next slide, please. Management and compliance for radio frequency related issues is a federal government responsibility. The Australian Communications Media Authority, ACMA, manage frequencies, frequency licenses and report on electromagnetic energy levels. The Ocean Reef example is of concern. The original EME levels have now increased from 3.9% to 6.12%. Ongoing addition of services increases levels, and there appear to be no compliance audits in place to monitor and manage this situation. Next slide, please. The original Sea Sports Club has 16 services connected. The original submission from the new tower mainly saw replacements. We now have 138 connected services that will continue to expand. This list on the screen is the ACMA licensing arrangements for the new tower. Next slide, please. This was the original pole with 16 recorded services at the Sea Rescue Club. Next slide, please. So, what is the EME testing protocol across the metropolitan area? And can we be assured that additional equipment and services are always recalibrated to determine local levels? Unfortunately, it appears that across the whole of Perth, only 11 sites have been tested for EME levels. Next slide, please. Furthermore, the two highest order predicted sites are in the northern suburbs, Watermans and Joondalup. These levels are predicted and claimed to be greater than the actual measurements. Next slide. So although ACMA is the regulator and licensing authority, our PANSA provides public health information and recommendations. In the case of the Ocean Reef Tower, the land topography is clearly a concern in relation to the distance of homes and elevation. Local residents should reasonably assume that accurate and ongoing EME levels are undertaken. Last slide, please. Finally, mobile cell towers are now an everyday part of life. Scientific uncertainty and lack of compliance monitoring and testing is unacceptable. The community reasonably assumes that the City of Joondalup would assist us in assuring that future decisions like this aren't made without adequate community consultation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Elected members, do we have any questions for Mr. Allen? If not, thank you, Mr. Allen. Can I call forward for a deputation, Ms. Mary O'Byrne?
Okay. Mary O'Byrne, 123 Glencore Loop, Kinross, and I'm making a presentation on the Falkland Park, in particular, hoping that councillors will support providing shade sails in the near future. Slide one. Sorry, slide one. Next. This is the Falklands Park soft play area, softball play area a year ago. As you can see, it was badly degraded, lifting and totally inappropriate for kids playing on, for grandparents or parents trying to intercept the kids. Next one. The edging was lifted up and so poor because the mulch was getting in under the matting. Next one. And the patching that had been done in 2019, I know perhaps none of you are dressmakers, but if you're dressmaking, if you're repairing, you need the material to match the material. When you put material in like this into a hard area that's already warped and breaking down, then you're not going to get a good meld. So next. This is the state of the metalwork when I went to have a look. When I was actually asked to have a look by the community. It looks worse. I understand that that actually is okay, and it's been scraped back. I've had a look, and it's been painted, so thank you. It's going to be painted. Thank you. Next. This is a global view. It's just part of the park. This is Falkland Park today, and you can see the matting is now changed. It was done in February, for which we thank you as well. But looking at it, if you look at the openness, the trees in the background are really far away. The tree to the side, it's just one. It's totally ineffective shade. And you can see it's the plastic structures, but the adjoining pieces are all metalwork. So the kids are either on it with, you know, feet exposed or little bottoms exposed. Thank you. Next. And this is a longer view of it. So it's really quite an oblong. It's a rectangular shape. The tree that you can see at the side is too far back on the, sorry, left-hand side as you look. It's too far back to give shade. And on both sides, the long sides of the rectangle, the peppermint gums are basically starved of growth. They're too close, and they're also too far away, and they're not high enough. They're not providing shade either. So it's a very ineffective shade. And I understand from the answers to the questions I put in on Falkland Park that this area and this play area was treed, I think it was 2014, but you can see the trees haven't thrived, and there's very, very little real shade. And being the kind of interactive person I am, I've spoken to parents and grandparents. They don't like the amount of sun the kids are collecting when using the facility. Next. I would like to thank the city of Joondalup for the way they have approached Earls Ferry Park and the play area. So next. If you look at this, these trees, I've watched them growing, and they have absolutely, I'd love to give person a medal for it. This is completely shaded, and you can, you know, you still have your kids with sunscreen on, but you could be quite happy they're not going to get burnt on the equipment. The trees are leaning into the old trees, and they're really beautiful. Next. You can see the whole scape. I haven't used any trickery with the camera. It's basically, that's how it is. And it's really comfortable for the kids. Thank you. Next. I hope I've got a next. I would just like to ask, so going back to the original photographs of Falkland, I would just like to say, councillors, could I ask you, I know that the park may be relocated in the future. This space might be relocated in the future. But in the meantime, our kids are being exposed to the sun and actually not using the park as much as they could do. It's a highly used park, and it's sports training and active games, winter and summer. We've got cricket and football, and the kids from the school, the high school, are there as well. What happens when the parents are there watching games or themselves active? The kids are often on the play equipment. It's basically, we want the kids looked after. I don't think the council, I've had a look at the way the trees have grown. With the best intentions, the city hasn't been able to provide tree shade. Tree shade right now, I don't think you can plant anything that's going to give that Earlsbury Park cover. And I really would ask you to help the community to get more active in the area and to feel appreciated. It's basically, could you act to push forward the placement wherever Falkland Park is in the list of, I mean, it's below a list of eight, and it already stated that the community might, that our place in that list might drop depending on what happens nearby. But this park is used a lot, and it could, Falkland Park place space is used quite a lot, and I'd like to see it improved. And maybe if the council is absolutely certain that it can tree it in the manner in which you can see here at Earls Ferry, then that would be appropriate. But I personally don't think it can, and I'm depending on councillors to act for the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Byrne. Just a reminder to elected members, this is a briefing session, so it's not for debate, but anybody is welcome to ask questions of Ms. O'Byrne. I'd just like to draw attention of elected members to three written questions that Ms. O'Byrne submitted on this topic, and the answers have been provided by the administration, so please make reference to that. Does any elected member wish to ask any questions to Ms. O'Byrne on this matter? Councillor Pizzi.
Mary, lots of people want shade sales at their local parks, and all the councils have put their hands up to wanting them in their local area, but we all have to abide by how the city comes up with where they are most needed. Do you think the community would like to see, in your point of view, that shade sale policy increase to have more put in throughout the community?
Thank you, Councillor Pizzi. That's an excellent question and brings up a point I should have mentioned already. It's basically, so you're asking me if people would like it. I wish I could show you the comments that people have put on the Facebook page when somebody brought it up. It was highly critical of the council. It's basically, I would actually ask councillors to go and have a look at the play space. I know some of the members have previously said that they go and inspect the sites they're asked to look in on, and I'd recommend it because it's overly exposed and it's dangerous to kids. Whereas like the Earls Ferry tree cover is brilliant. You'd never ask for shade sales there, but...
Thank you, Ms. Byrne.
Thank you.
Further questions, Councillor Pizzi? Any other elected members wish to ask questions of Ms. Byrne? Thank you, Ms. Byrne.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, Councillor Chester? I give you.
Really, it's a question for the staff relevant to this issue, if that's okay.
Yes, Councillor Chester.
According to the report.
Advice has changed. The answer is no, not at this time. You can obviously ask questions to the administration later this evening. Thank you. Any further questions to Ms. Byrne? Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, presiding member. Ms. Byrne, firstly, thank you for obviously submitting this petition. I do have a question. Other than the shade sale, are you broadly happy with the other works that have happened at the playground?
Okay, so the shade sales I consider a necessity. The softball matching went in February. That was brilliant. I'm not denigrating the city, but it was delayed too long getting the softball matching in. And I actually have gone and tested the metalwork myself to see if it feels sound, and I believe it is. So when it's painted, the one thing that's missing is the shade. And however you provide it, right now the kids are not protected.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will just comment to elected members for their benefit that in the written responses to the questions asked by Ms. O'Byrne, answers have been given about the shade cell and also about the softball. Any further questions, Councillor Chester, to Ms. O'Byrne?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Presiding Member. I noticed in the report, Ms. O'Byrne, that it indicates, according to the matrix in terms of priority, that there's an eight-year wait. Just to let you know, I will be asking the officers if there's any opportunity to bring it forward, but I presume that you feel that 8 years is too long a wait for the refurbishment.
Oh, definitely. And when you read the answers to the questions I put in, you can see that there's no guarantee that it will happen in 8 years either. So basically, if the councillors don't support us now and make it something definite, then it's going to be an indefinite, and it won't help the community. Thank you.
Elected members, any further questions for Ms. O'Byrne? Thank you, Ms. O'Byrne.
Thank you.
We now move on to item 5, public question time. Written questions have been received prior to the briefing session to questions from Ms. O'Byrne and also from Ms. Michelle Kwok. So there was a register of persons wishing to ask public questions. I can tell you that nobody registered on that. This is a call if anybody would like to ask public questions. Yep, just one moment, sir. Okay, so we do have people wishing to make questions. So there's a set of procedures relating to public question time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You have the opportunity to ask two questions, and your questions should be directed to myself as chair and asked in a polite and respectful manner. Questions asked at a briefing session must relate to an item listed on the briefing session agenda. Please state your name and address for the public record. I'll call you forward now, sir.
Hello, Chair. My name is John Kelly, 7A Westbank Vista, Ocean Reef. I'm not sure it's on the agenda, but it was just a question.
So let's check first. What does the matter relate to?
So it's really more of a suggestion. We've got a pothole in our street.
Sorry.
6 inches.
Sorry, just a second. So just as a reminder, this has to be a question, and it has to relate to an item on the agenda for tonight. If you have a question about another matter, you can ask that at the council meeting, which is next week.
Cool.
Thank you.
Next week. Thank you.
Any other members of the public? Yes, sir. Going forward.
Good evening, councillors. Troy Covert, replacing Craigie. In regards to the revitalised development of the NDIS properties, there was some public objection. Some questions that we did actually raise were in regards to how the community consultation was taken, because it was very confusing, we needed to clarify with council on several occasions on exactly what we were making comment on, and it clearly steered us into a direction of asking two main points on the development application of a lot of the information that was not actually...
Sorry, can I direct you to ask your questions, please?
So my question lies around the consideration. Has council considered the actual impact of such group dwellings running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, of being able to butt these houses up to the current residents, with thorough areas that are coming through and continual staffing requirements that are required for a commercial operation, okay, and also lighting requirements that are required 24 hours a day in public.
Okay, thank you for your long question. Just for everybody's benefit, this relates to item 12.2 on the agenda, proposed 9 group dwellings on lot 29, 81 revitalised circuit in Craigie. Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Deputy Mayor. The city in its assessment has considered the submissions we received during consultation. We've included a summary of those as an attachment to the report. When it comes to the matters that we seek community feedback on for residential development, residential development is guided by the residential design codes, and for development like this, there's basically two pathways in which a proposal or elements of a proposal can be considered. One's called a deemed to comply pathway. That's quite a prescribed set of metric standards that require a particular development to be of a certain height or no more than a certain height or a certain distance from a neighbouring property. If a proposal meets that prescribed metric, it is, as the name suggests, it's deemed to comply, so it's considered to meet its requirement, and therefore there's no room for a decision maker, a local government or a state government to exercise any discretion not to approve that component of the application. If a part of the application doesn't meet a deemed to comply standard, it's judged against a set of design principles. It's that space where there is the ability for a decision maker to exercise some judgment or some discretion as to whether or not that part of the building is appropriate. And so for that reason, and whilst I don't know the specifics of the matters that you feel that you are contained by in terms of making comments, but that's typically what happens with a residential proposal. We will advertise and seek feedback on those elements where we are being asked to exercise some discretion versus the ones that meet those deemed to comply standards, so we don't really have an opportunity to exercise discretion there. They're deemed to be appropriate.
Thank you, Director Lee. Do you have a second question, sir?
Yeah, so just in regards to that, I'm assuming that there's a level of common sense that would generally apply in those rules, and that's what we think has actually been missed in our circumstance. With this development and the thoroughfare that's now coming through, it's kind of like having a road now at the north and the south of our property.
Sorry, can you just keep to a question, please?
So the question is that these practicalities of common sense have been completely bypassed from a resident's point of view, and I don't understand how you can kind of do that in that structure.
If you can come to a question. Is there a question?
That was the question, how common sense has been...
I'll give the director an opportunity to respond.
Thank you, through you, Deputy Mayor. I do take your point, and sometimes planning can be quite complicated and not easy to follow how one outcome is considered to be appropriate. I suppose the only way I can answer your question is that we are required to undertake our assessment and make recommendations based on the frameworks before us, and whilst I appreciate that not everyone may agree that the requirements of the frameworks are appropriate, they're the ones that we do have to observe, they're the ones we have to assess our proposal against, and they're the ones we have to make recommendations against as well.
Thank you, Director Lee, and thank you, sir. Any other members of the public wishing to ask public questions? So if you'd raise your hand. Yep. Come forward and state your name and address for the record, please.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jonathan Young, 24 Vive Avenue, Craigie. This is in regards to item 12.2, the independent living behind my property. My question is, I've got two questions. First question is, there's a retaining wall which is being constructed perpendicular to my property, and this requires a lot of earthworks in order to build this wall which runs perpendicular for lot 2C, I think it is, 2C and 2A. With this particular retaining wall being built, are there going to be any, have they considered the effects of and any damage that may be caused to the other existing properties that run along Vive Avenue.
Thank you, Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The potential impacts on adjoining properties through a construction process is something that is a consideration that sits outside of the planning application that the council are being asked to consider as part of this round of council meetings. But certainly it is something that a builder or a developer does need to take into account. What I have seen people do in the past that are neighbouring a property that is going to be developed is they've undertaken their own dilapidation reports, and so basically establishing a baseline of the condition of a property, and therefore they've got something to refer back to if they do have concerns through the development process that their property might be impacted.
Thank you. And your second question, sir?
The second part of that, just back onto that, with regards to the dilapidation report, is compensation provided by the construction company in that case?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It's my understanding there's not an obligation or requirement for them to compensate or pay for that dilapidation report. It might be something a neighbour and an adjoining developer may be able to agree to, but I don't believe there's an obligation for them to do so.
Thank you, sir.
No
more questions. Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to ask questions tonight? If not, I declare public question time closed and we move to public statement time. A register of persons wishing to make a public statement has been provided out the front. There's a set of procedures relating to public statement time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You are able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes, and your statement should be directed to myself as chair and be polite and respectful. No questions or discussion will occur at the end of your statement. Statements made at a briefing session must relate to an item on the briefing session agenda. On the register, I have one resident wishing to make a public statement. That's Mr. Kim Allen, and for the benefit of elected members and the audience. Since Mr. Kim Allen did a deputation, normally we don't allow a follow-up statement, but this is regarding a different matter on the item on the agenda for tonight. So therefore, Mr. Kim Allen, please come forward and make a statement. You have 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Presiding Member. Kim Allen, Reacher Place, Ocean Reef. Tonight I would like to discuss the terms of reference for the Coastal Hazard Risk Management Community Reference Group. Firstly, I'd like to commend Council for agreeing to the formation of the CHARMAP Community Reference Group. Clearly, this recognises the significant collective wisdom and experience held within our community. It's important, however, that for a community reference group to be truly representative of community views and expectations, that full engagement in terms of terms of reference are guaranteed. It's hoped that full collaboration is sought from community representatives for any future work plans through the adoption of inclusive terms of reference. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Are there any other members of the public in the gallery wishing to make a public statement this evening? If not, I'll declare public statement time closed. The next item on the agenda is apologies and leave of absence. I've received an apology for tonight from Mayor Jacob and from Councillor Hamilton Prime for tonight's meeting. There is also a previously approved leave of absence for Mayor Albert Jacob from the 12th of September to the 2nd of October inclusive. Are there any elected members requesting a leave of absence? None? Thank you. Next item is confirmation of minutes, which will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on Tuesday, the 17th of September. Next item being announcements by the presiding member without discussion, which will also be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on the Tuesday, the 17th of September. Next item 10 is identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. There are no confidential reports on tonight's agenda. However, the following items may be dealt with behind closed doors if there are any questions on the confidential attachments, those being item 12.12, invitation to join panel of pre-qualified suppliers, 022/24 for the supply and delivery of tree stock, and item 12.13, tender 019/24, bulk furniture and white goods collection and processing services. It's my intention to move those items to the end of the agenda for this evening, just in case any elected members wish to ask any questions which relate to the confidential attachments. We'll now move on to item 11, petitions. The City has received one petition, being a petition requesting the City of Joondalup do not proceed with the planned pathway for Brockerdale Avenue in Duncraig. Are there any other petitions received by elected members? So just to confirm that the submitted petition will be received and checked for validity, and if valid, it will be presented to the Council meeting to be held on the 17th of September. We now move on to the reports section of the agenda, and I'll use my discretion with regard to the order in which we address these items. Given that we had deputations on two matters this evening, I'm going to bring forward item 12.6, the status of petitions, will be the first item discussed. If we can give elected members a few moments to determine whether they wish to ask questions on this item. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. My first question relates to the petition for the Ocean Reef Marina telecommunications poll, and it's in relation to the answers to the questions from Ms. Kwok. It says in answer one that the City has written to the Western Australian Planning Commission seeking on advice whether it will consider the creation of a community consultation improvement scheme policy for development proposals within the improvement scheme. Have we had any correspondence at this stage from either the Department or the Minister, and can we be provided with the letter that's been sent?
Thank you. Your question is addressed through me, and I'll pass that to Director Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, through you. We have not had any correspondence in return to our letter that we sent to the WAPC. There has been a verbal acknowledgement of its receipt, and I am happy to share with elected members a copy of the letter that we sent.
Any further questions, Councillor Kingston?
Yes, please. I just thought I'd bring the meeting's attention to that I'll be putting for an alternate for Part 8 of the motion to add an 8.3 to request the Planning Commission to provide full justification of why no public consultation was made and the planning approval that was given. A 8.4 to request ACMA to do sampling at the Ocean Reef Marina site, given that the DA was approved at 62 services on the monopole and it's now 138. And then thirdly, an 8.5 to request the Planning Minister to consider the relocation of the telecommunications infrastructure. So I'll circulate that for everyone's benefit.
Thank you. And do you have any other questions?
Yes, just lastly, do we have any clear rationale at this stage of why the Western Australian Planning Commission did not engage in consultation, given it appears that the provisions in the scheme text require it, given it's a structure and there's more than a minor departure from the scheme?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We don't have that specific response. When we have queried the department in the past, they'd advised that they elected not to undertake community consultation as, in their view, the application met the objectives of State Planning Policy 5.2, which is a policy around telecommunications infrastructure, as well as meeting the objectives of the Ocean Reef Marina Improvement Scheme Number 1. However, in our correspondence sent to the Commission, we have asked more specifically how they've undertaken their assessment and arrived at their decision based on some of those more specific clauses of the improvement scheme.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. And just the last question. Are we aware if any state government department provides testing or sampling of public health exposure to electromagnetic radiation? Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. In addition to our letter sent to the WAPC, we've also written to the Australian Communications and Media Authority and asked for their guidance or clarification on how compliance with relevant standards will be monitored and what measures are put in place to ensure limits are not exceeded. So we've received some preliminary acknowledgement from ACMA that our correspondence has been received, but we haven't actually received an answer to the questions we've raised.
Finished, Councillor Kingston?
Yes, that's all. Thank you. I will circulate the alternate.
Thank you. Any other elected members wishing to ask any questions on this item? If not, the next item we'll cover is also relating to a deputation. That's item 12.16, petition in relation to the maintenance, repair and upgrade of Falkland Park play space. Any elected members wishing to ask questions? Councillor Hatton.
Yes. So in regards to questions previously submitted by Ms. O'Byrne, there's a reference to obviously the 8 facilities which have priority for shade sale. The line after that says, please note that one of the scoring criteria on the matrix refers whether there are other shade facilities in the suburb with artificial shade, and then basically goes on to explain that if you have a suburb with a shade sale, the other potential parks will fall down the matrix. The question is, if we were to exclude that that criteria from the matrix, would this facility rank higher up in the skills matrix? So that is, excluding the proximity to other facilities, would it rank higher on the matrix?
Mr. Hanlon.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. If you have a look at Council, the current list, for example, we have two parks in Woodvale. So in this particular case, if, for example, Timber Lane Park in Woodvale, the shade soles were supplied there, then the Chichester Park one would drop down the list and the other parks would move. And that's how the matrix would work. So it really does depend on where they all lie, as far as I'm aware, and that one that has been up for Falkland Park, I think, is the only one in the top 12 or 13 of Kinross. So that particularly won't move in its particular, it'll only go up if these other ones get built first.
Yeah. Anything further, Councillor Hutton?
Yeah, just following on from that, there's a reference to the fact that the trees were currently planted in 2012. Does the city agree that the current trees are not performing as would have been expected when they were planted in 2012?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. We undertook an extensive tree planting program as part of tree planting around play space in 2012, where we identified a majority of the parks which could actually benefit from shade around the play spaces. There are different locations which struggle a bit more than others, depending on soil type. There is a lot of limestone cap rock in that area, which does dictate on how well the trees will go. Secondly, I think there is also an easement that runs past that current location, which prevents us from planting trees on the northwest corner of that park. That's why, in the future, if that particular play space comes up, we would seriously look at its current location and how we could better relocate the play space so it would fit into the surrounding areas, providing us more opportunity to plant trees and or a shade site, if that was what the council requested.
Yeah. Anything further, Councillor Hunt?
Yeah, in terms of the facilities which are currently ranked higher, are any of those facilities earmarked in this financial year to receive shade sales?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, we do have one of the these parks. We do have one listed for this year. I'll just have to double check that, and I can come back. I'll take that on notice, Council, and I'll come back to you. Currently, we have one listed per year.
Okay. Yeah, one listed per year. Yep, that's fine.
Anything further?
Yes. So, I notice on the agenda we are given two options: option one and option two. Option one is in regards to I'll read it for clarity. Notes the maintenance activities undertaken at Falkland Park and requests the installation of artificial shade be listed for consideration ahead of other higher priority locations. From an administrative perspective, are those the only two options? Or would it be possible to actually maybe instigate a review of the entire shade sale policy to see where this can go, potentially in a new matrix?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, the shade sale matrix is quite new in what we looked at in regarding the different circumstances on how we would increase our shade sale profile in areas where we couldn't get natural shade. The public space framework that, which we have got in place, which we adopted in 23, has influenced where we require, because it's based on the needs of the regional and district parks first, because they do have the larger play spaces and they do have a greater need. In saying that, part of the in moving forward, it really is dictated based on the amount of money that is available to actually place shade sales within our parks. We do have a lot of parks which do not have shade sales, as a preference is for natural shade where we can establish it.
Yeah, and then just on that, would I be able to request an alternate be prepared? Looking at point 4 of the recommendation, it requests the Chief Executive Officer to consider the installation of shade sales when the play space is renewed if the play space cannot be located to make use of natural shade, noting that will be in 2032. I'd like to strike the end part so that it's just requesting the Chief Executive to consider the installation of the shade sale. I would also like to work with the administration, if possible, on an additional part to maybe refer this to a strategy session to review the entire shade sale policy, so that we can take a holistic view going forward. But happy, could I be provided with that wording?
Thank you, Councillor. Just a quick one for myself to Mr. Hamlin. Can I just ask, when was the last time that Council reviewed the shade sale policy? Thank you.
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I would just take that one on notice because I've got an idea it was 3 years ago, but I'd rather be sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's in relation to Ms. O'Byrne's question and then the parks that have been listed for shade sales and the order of priority. So my first question is, could we be provided an inventory of parks with natural shade? And then also that same inventory, listing those parks with sufficient artificial shade. So we can just understand for each suburb which parks have sufficient natural shade and which ones currently have artificial shade. Is that possible?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, that's possible.
Thank you. And then a further question, could we get more clarification on how the matrix ranks different parks? Just trying to understand how we've come up with that, those eight. And given that there's a lot of parks in the district without shade sales, and the officer's recommendation here says that for option one, that, you know, noting that if we were to proceed with putting shade sales in this park, it would be in preference to areas of higher priority locations. So can we just have some commentary about how do we calculate higher priority locations currently? And, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, that will be available. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other elected members? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just a couple of quick ones, if I could. I was just wondering if the city has any idea of the approximate cost of a shade sale for that park area.
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Depending on the size, Councillor, they will average between $30,000
to $50,000. Anything you.
Further, Councillor O'Neill? Yes, there is, yes. And in relation to shade sales, and I note that obviously the rubber was replaced in 2024, I looked at some of the photos earlier as well, and it appears that the play space is siliconed, the joints where it's rusting and thing. Have city officers been out there and had a look at that? And further to that, would the installation of a shade sail, now that this has been replaced with this fresh rubber, would that extend the life of that rubber and save the cost by extending the life of that rubber, like in terms of UV protection.
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Putting shade sails over the top of a play space which is predominantly rubber softball will lengthen the life of the areas which are under shade most of the time. It's the UV sunlight which breaks down the binder within the surface which binds the rubber together, which is the major issue. The issue being that once we place the shade sails up, they have a 20-year structural life, and so that will dictate the size and the position of that play space if we do decide to change it or when we do replace it in 2032, because that will only be halfway through its life at that time, the shade sail.
Councillor O'Neill, anything further?
Yes, just one more. So should the city decide, obviously, that we could, if there was some way that we could install the shade sail earlier, would it be possible to, at the same time, retrofit new play equipment to that earlier as well, so it's all done in one shot? I've just seen the photos there and the rusted and the silicon on there. It just doesn't seem like it's been done in the appropriate sequence.
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The play space is ordered independently twice a year. So based on those photos that we were seeing, they're over 12 months old. The play space has undergone a refit in regards to the metal structures in that they've been sanded back. They currently will be painted. So it will be refurbished. So what those photos are don't reflect what the play space will end up being. Different parts of the play space were at different times, so we will, like plastic, small structures and so forth, we will change them probably every 2 to 5 years, depending on wear and tear. It's a heavily used, Ms. O'Byrne indicated, it's a heavily used park, so there is a fair amount of vandalism which also happens in that park, and is part of the reason why the rubber softball didn't last as long as it did. But as the play space, by doing the refurbishment work that we do, which we do to a lot of our parks, will extend its life to the 2032.
Thank you. Is that it, Councillor O'Neill? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. Are there any circumstances, question through to the manager, are there any circumstances where the priority matrix might be flexible and allow bringing forward some refurbishment of a particular location or park?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Deputy Mayor. As I said, the matrix was developed three years ago. We really did focus at that time on those coastal locations where you cannot grow trees and they are heavily used regional parks. So we can review the matrix, but we recently did update it based on the public art and space framework, which was recently adopted by the city. The matrix is fairly new, and it's based on areas where we know we can't get natural shade to grow, either through the size of the play space or its location or the soil type that's underneath it, which will prevent those trees from growing.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Councillor Ventura, do you have a question?
Yes, thank you. Through you. Just a quick one based on park traffic. Based on the park traffic in this example, are there play spaces with higher traffic still awaiting shade sales?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The response to Ms. O'Byrne's question one, the answer, Timber Lane, Dampier, Campbell, Warrow, Chichester, Warrandyke, McDonald, Shepherds, Heathridge, they would do have more foot traffic than what is, because they are districted regional parks, where Falkland Park is a neighbourhood sports park.
Anything further, Councillor Ventura?
Just a quick one. And any additional ones that are on that list that fit into that same category that would be falling ahead based on traffic?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. This list is current and was updated prior to publishing it today. So where Falkland Park sits at the moment, which I think was 12th or equal 12th or 13th, then this would be indicative. We do have Pinneroo Point shade sales, which are And I think that answers a question which the previous councillor was asking, whether what's on the Capital Works program. Our Pinneroo Point would come into that point, as its location is on the beach and we have difficulty in establishing trees in those areas.
Councillor Pizzi.
Could we get a costing of the parks that do not have natural shade from trees, and including the ones that can't grow trees near the coastal, so inland and coastal, that haven't got natural shade? Can we get a list of how many of them there are and about average cost of what it would take to shade all of them?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, we'll be able to provide you with that cost.
Anything further, Councillor Pizzi? Councillor May.
Thank you for your Deputy Mayor, to the relevant director. Can I just get a reminder of roughly how much it costs to install shade sails over a single playground and the ongoing maintenance costs of bringing them down and putting them back up every year?
Mr. Hellman.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The cost for installing is between $30,000 to $50,000, depending on the size of the play space. We do take them down at the beginning of winter, and we do put them back up again. The cost, I believe, is costs around about $150 to $200 per play space to drop them and then put them back up again.
Anything further, Councillor May?
Just one more question for you. Do we have a rough idea of how many play spaces there are across the whole district?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, if I get the question right, total number of play spaces the city has, 270.
Anything further, Councillor May?
Thank you, sir. That would be roughly $8.1 million. Thank you.
Any elected members who have not yet asked questions? There's your opportunity. Okay, I'll just give the opportunity to Councillor O'Neill to ask one further question.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just looking at the list there, obviously, and discussing with my co-ward, Councillor Chester there, Shepherd's Bush obviously has a very, very lush green trees over and out. Would it be possible for the city to, after discussing with Councillor Chester, would it be possible for the city to put that park in instead of the Shepherd's Bush Kingsley Park? Is there a way to maybe manoeuvre them onto that list so they get in earlier, because trees do grow in Kingsley quite well, but in those coastal areas it's a little bit more difficult, and we have to protect our children from the sun. So,
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We will just have to review the matrix, because the matrix will be indicating other reasons why bar shade at these parks have been listed. So by reviewing the matrix, we'll give you a bit more clear understanding of how we've come to those parks to be where they are on the priority listing.
Okay, thank you, elected members. We'll move on to back to the normal sequence in the agenda. So we'll start with item 12.1, being developments and subdivision applications, July 2024. Any elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In relation to DA 24/0517, which is multiple dwellings, 15/22 Cassinia Road, Duncraig, as shown on page 7 of the attachment, will there be any, will this result in any impact on the parking in that area, given the Leitch and a few concerns over the parking situation? Thank you.
That's okay.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, the application that was approved for that won't have any impact on parking or parking demand for the property. The additions is for a patio or a pergola to one of the apartments there.
Councillor Fisher, thank you. Any other elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? If not, we'll move to item 12.2, proposed 9 group dwellings on lot 2981, revitalised circuit, Craigie. Is any elected members wishing to ask a question? Councillor Pizzi.
Just a few questions if I can. Is the city considering opening the Novio Walk to traffic to allow for a second entrance and exit to the estate?
Totally.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, not as part of this application. I can provide some information in the pack as much as I can in terms of what has led to De Novo Walk not having vehicle access at this point in time. But yeah, certainly as part of this application, that's not something that is being contemplated.
Okay.
Councillor Pizzi?
And has the city asked the developer as a part of this estate to, or this new estate, to upgrade the local green space is it called the Vive Estate, to allow for toilets and better access for people with disabilities?
Gratefully.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. So not as part of this individual development, and then the broader development itself, the developer, which at the time was LandCorp or Development WA now, they've finished their role in this estate, and so there wouldn't be an opportunity for us to go back and ask them for any future park upgrades. That would be something that the city would have to consider itself.
So,
Councillor Pizzi, you have another question?
Sorry. As part of this development application, we've not requested them. Are we able to do that, or not now, but could we have?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, I don't believe we would be able to. There's a need and nexus principle, if you like, when it comes to what we can require a developer to do as part of their developments. And whilst the development has been designed to support accessible housing or NDIS type housing, it doesn't have to be used by that, and there's no obligations under the planning framework for them to provide any sort of amenities or facilities outside of the property as well.
Yeah.
Any further questions, Councillor Pizzi?
Yes, please. Is there extra lighting requirements for the dwellings because they are built for disability services?
Totally.
Thank you. Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. There's no specific lighting requirements that I'm aware of that a developer is required to install because of the nature of the housing being disability housing. There is a recommendation on the as part of the officer assessment for lighting to be provided along the common driveway and in the common areas, and within that condition as well, there's a requirement for that lighting to meet the relevant Australian standard and also manage any potential light spill as well. So that's how we would expect or seek the development to maintain the amenity of surrounding property, so to control the amount of light that leaves it.
And
any further questions, Councillor Pizzi?
Yeah, just on that, was it the city's opinion that there needs to be different lighting or more lighting because it was a disability residential estate?
Mr. Tertulli?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, not specifically for this development. There is a requirement under the R codes, and I can't quite remember the specific clause at the moment, but there is a requirement for lighting to be provided to a certain level, and so the recommendation for that condition to be included is just to ensure that requirement of the R codes are met through the development process.
Okay. Any more questions, Councillor Pizzi?
Just one more question. There's going to be quite a number of increased bins to this area. Is there enough verge frontage for these bins to go in and still people to exit the area and walk by?
Totally.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, so as part of the application, the developer submitted a waste management plan that's been reviewed internally by our waste team, and they have considered and confirmed that the method of collection, which will be along the verge, is appropriate. We do note that through the process, there'll be a need for the developer to
to engage with our waste team to just make sure that the locations are clearly marked out and set aside in the verge so that they can be managed amongst the vehicle access points as well as the bits of verge that aren't being used for vehicle access.
Thank you. I'll ask any of the elected members who wish to ask a question on this item. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. My question just relates broadly to the development application and the recommendation to approve. Are there any significant elements of this development which have not met the deemed to comply standards?
Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I wouldn't say that there are any significant elements of the application that don't mean that deemed to comply. The council report or the report prepared for council does identify some of the key ones. Street setbacks is one. There are a couple of dwellings that are short on their open space. There are some driveways that are closer to a street corner than what the deemed to comply requirements require. But as I said, they've been reviewed internally and against the design principles of the R codes and are considered to meet those objectives.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Following to the officer's recommendation, and I think it's point five, relating to the landscaping plan. The landscaping plan, which is contained in attachment 12.2.2, I'm just trying to clarify the number of street trees which are going to be included in this. So according to the legend, it says there's three eucalyptus prescinia, but on the drawing it appears there's four on the street frontage. So can we just get some clarifications about the quantities of the trees, whether it's according to the plan or according to the legend, which is then...
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I think I will take that question on notice, if I may, and just clarify that in the elected member pack for later this week.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
No, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just my question is in relation to the setbacks there, and I was wondering if I could ask the city to supply some information just in relation to setbacks previously approved from deemed to complies in that suburb. If I could maybe, before the meeting of council, get a list of any of the, over, say, the last 10 years, properties that have been noted on deemed to comply, but the setbacks haven't been compliant and they've still proceeded, just for my own information for decision-making.
Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We can certainly have a look. My initial concern would be that would be a significant volume of work to undertake, and I wouldn't necessarily be confident that we'd be able to prepare it in time for council to consider next week. What I can do, given that this site is within the Viva State, there were some specific development standards that were set up for Viva State that may have different setbacks, and by different I mean reduced setback obligations to what is currently in place now. So perhaps I can provide a comparison of that so council will have an idea of what the surrounding context is in terms of setbacks versus what's proposed as part of this proposal. That's something I'm very confident that we'll be able to provide in the time available. But, yeah, I would not be confident if I was to go back and audit Craigie, if you like, as a suburb, in terms of the number of applications that we've had through there in the last 10 years.
Anything further, Councillor O'Neill?
No, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Any other elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? I will just check with Councillor Pizzi. Did you have anything more? I think you, at one stage, you perhaps wanted to ask another question.
No, that's all right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We'll therefore move on to the next item, which is 12.3, execution of documents. Do any elected members have questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.4, status of council decisions, July 2024. Any questions on this item? Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I have a couple of questions in relation to item 2.2 and 1.3 on attachment page 147, and also 1.6 on attachment page 148.
Just take questions one by one, please.
Okay. Firstly, in relation to 2.2, the action from the minutes emanated from the Audit Risk Committee dealing with a report on the risk management process undertaken by the city, particularly with upgrading parks for the installation of basketball pads. The action taken states that the report is currently on hold awaiting the proposed guidelines for community basketball facilities from DEWA. My understanding is that the report from DEWA was prepared a couple of years ago but not released or publicised by the minister. So given that circumstance, can we have an update on what's happened to the DEWA guideline report? And as it's unlikely that the report will be released in the foreseeable future, would it therefore be appropriate for the city to develop its own policy or guidelines for the installation of basketball pads that may affect nearby residents? That's question one.
Okay, thank you for your question. Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. As you're right, Councillor, DEWA have put the policy on the back shelf, back burner. I know PLA, WA and WELG have been advocating for a response from DEWA to be able to provide a workable solution for local governments to be able to proceed. We are currently working with DEWA on another matter for Chichester Park and the skate park there and the noise issues that we're working through. I'll take the opportunity in the next two weeks to raise that with them at the time and see if there is any movement on that. And because, as I believe that whilst we might develop a policy, at the end of the day, DEWA will have the overriding authority on whether with noise levels of what will pass and what won't.
Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Question two probably relates on the similar lines, is that if our own policy or guidelines were developed, would this and then enable the progress on item 1.3, which is dealing with a notice of motion from Councillor May for a report on basketball pads to be installed at very locations which are listed?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I would like to take that question on notice and I'll provide the information in the pack.
Councillor Fisherick.
And finally, in relation to 1.6, dealing with the Braden Park basketball facility, which was to investigate alternate age-appropriate infrastructure for Braden Park, would such a policy or guidelines enable the requested report to come back for council for consideration?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. If we deal with your second question, Councillor Fishwick, then that will then assist us with answering the third question.
Thank you. Just bear with me because I believe that if we don't do something about these items, they'll stagnate on this action schedule for years and years to come. So,
do you have any further questions?
Pardon?
Yeah. You're going to suggest an alternate?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So I propose an alternate for the motion that's in the report by adding two new clauses, clause 2 and a clause 3, which obviously is subject to wordsmithing by the administration, but along the lines that a report be presented to council on the progress of the DEWA guidelines for the community basketball pad facilities, and 2, that subject to the report from DEWA not being released or publicised, the city develops its own guidelines for community basketball facilities. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Fishwick. Any other elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's just in relation to the item from the 28th to the 5th, 2024, which is the Murray Road Duncraig Cafe decision. I'm just wondering if the payment plan has been entered into and whether the proponent has paid the money under the plan for the construction of the
panel. So just for clarity, can you reference the page number you're referring to, please?
Oh,
page 165 of the attachments.
Okay, just bear with us. Director Lee.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. The payment plan hasn't been entered into yet. We're determining internally the timing exactly of when those construction works are going to occur, and at that stage we'll be able to invoice to basically enter into the payment plan with the applicant.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Yes. Could we just get some more details about the payment plan? And I think there was I can't remember if it was a loan component of it, if there was any interest that's charged or security against.
Director Lee?
I think for one of the bays. So I think two of the bays, the payment was up front, but not the third.
Is that finished? Yep. Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm just happy to provide some more detail as to how the payment plan will be structured and executed.
Thank you.
Any further elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Page 149, regarding the animal exercise area, we have an update on when that is likely to come forth to Council.
Mr. Hamling, are you able to answer that question, please?
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. There was money in this year's budget to undertake a extension to Elkhart Park, and the planning, we're going through that planning at the moment in that regards, with work to be commenced in probably quarter three this financial year.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. That's not the item. This is in terms of the holistic animal exercise area policy plan, whatever you want to call it, that we're going to be developed.
Okay. Mr. Hamley.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yeah, the dog management plan currently is in the process of being formalised. We are looking at going out to public consultation later in quarter two to gain residents' responses and in how they see the city's parks and areas being managed with dogs.
Councillor Raftus.
So in terms of the question, when do we expect it will come to Council?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, we are looking at presenting a dog management plan to the elected members in the fourth quarter in 2024-25, probably around end of May, June.
Thank you, Mr. Hamling. Councillor Raftus, anything further?
A question on, is 2-year time frame typical for such a plan from the resolution in, September 2022 to have it by June 23. So just, is there a comment around that sort of time delay for such a plan to be presented?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It's a significant piece of work which affects a lot of the business units throughout the city, which was part of the strategic reference group meeting which we had earlier this year, where we gained what we believed from that reference group, the way that we should be moving in developing our questions and how we should go move forward in developing a dog management plan. The community consultation, which will be citywide as we extensive, and then from that we need to then formulate the plan. So June 25 is an expected time for that to be completed.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus, anything further?
Yes, thanks. Page 152, in terms of the policy around renaming of parks. Second half of 2024, is that on track?
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Councillor Raftus, could I please ask you just to clarify again the page number?
Councillor Raftus?
Crosses over 151, 152. It's item 1.6.
Okay, thank you, has it. Directly.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The intent is to bring forward to Council the outcomes of some work that we've been doing in terms of renaming a couple of our parks, being Rev John Smithies Park and Black Boy Park, later this year. I think we were intending to start that discussion with elected members in November, and once we have that feedback and those outcomes, that's when we'll be able to look at revising the policy itself.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Same page 152 regarding the development of policy on self-service TAB gambling facilities. Has that policy commenced, the development?
Mr. Hamley?
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll need to take that one on notice. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Raftus, anything further?
Yes, please. Page 155 regarding the Reconciliation Action Plan. There was an expectation of progress in June in terms of the artist. Has that been achieved? Are we on track for the next stage of the RAP?
Totally.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, we are. We've finalised the work with the artist. The document's now in the very final stages internally of its final graphic design and marketing. We'd expect in the next couple of weeks to be resubmitting it to Reconciliation Australia. So we've progressed well over the last couple of months. And as I said, we're just at that final stage now.
Anything further, Councillor Raftus?
Yes, last one, if I may. Page 162, the insurance. There was going to be a report in quarter one. I didn't see one in this pack, so I'm assuming we haven't met that time frame. Do we have a time frame?
Director Parry.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, and yes, Councillor Raftus, I was anticipating that a report was to be presented to this meeting of the this meeting. However, there has been some delays, but I'm hoping within the next month or two that report will be submitted. It hasn't prevented us having a look at the imminent engagement of a consultant to review our insurance policies in any case.
Thank you. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Two queries. Page 150, item 1.17 and 1.18. The first one refers to the transfer of land from the state to the city. Has that transfer occurred? And the other one is the proposed new lease agreement with Silver Chain. I'm talking about their premises in Malanda Boulevard. Has that new lease been instigated?
Mr. Hamlin?
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take that one on notice. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Chester. Any further elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? If not, we move on to item 12.5, minutes of regional council meetings. Any elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? If not, we move on to item 12.7, Coastal Hazard Risk Management and Adaptation Plan, Project Plan and Community Reference Group Terms of Reference. Any elected members wishing to ask questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. My first question relates to when do we believe that the work plan for the community reference group will be created?
Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Following Council's decision to endorse the terms of reference, we would then be looking at going out in around quarter two to recruit for the members. Following that, we would be looking at putting together a work plan as specified in the project plan. The work that they would be doing initially would be around the community engagement strategy. So that would be the key body of work.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. For the other elements of the work plan, which will probably relate to the CHAR map, and this is later down the road, do we envisage that the community reference group will have an ability to discuss or have some input into what work the reference group should undertake?
Ms. Vicario.
Once the councillors approved a work plan.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Councillor Kingston, sorry, could you just clarify the community reference group would guide?
So what I'm asking is that once the council approves a work plan, will we be discussing with the community reference group once it's formed how they will be tackling those different work items, say the order or particular details relating to it, or do we just envisage that the council will set the work plan and then that's it? Because it says here that the presiding member may approve alterations to the endorsed work plan. So will the community reference group have an input into the contents of the work plan? Maybe that's a simpler way of putting it.
Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. The intention is that council would set the direction for the community reference group. And the project plan would guide the work to be done. As you're aware, it's a pretty structured process in terms of developing the CHAR map, so we would intend to follow the state planning policy and guidelines in terms of that work.
Councillor Kingston, anything further?
Yes, thank you. In relation to, again, the community reference group assisting with the development of the CHAR map, it says here, status of advice, that there's no ability of the reference group to refer matters to the council or the chief executive. Does that exclude referring questions to the technical reference group? So if out of discussing the work plan a matter arises and they wish to then have some clarification on it, a question's raised, will there be the ability to refer those questions to the technical reference group?
Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, the intention is that we would be able to take questions from the community reference group, seek information and then provide that back at future meetings. The intention is also that we would have those technical experts attending some of the community reference group meetings as we progress through development of the plan.
Thank you. And just a further one relating to State Planning Policy 2.6. There is a review which has been discussed, and I think our last update was that the review report has been created and that was being considered by the Commission. Do we have an update on that process and when we believe it's to be concluded? I think our previous advice was early last year. We're just seeing if that's changed.
Ms. Vicario.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We provided an update in August at the strategy session, so that information is still current. So we're looking around 2025-26 to have the review completed.
Yep. And yes, a further question on that, just to clarify, it does seem to be contained in the project plan here that as far as the bulk and the engagement of the consultants, the bulk of the money to engage the consultants is only going to occur once the state planning policy has been reviewed and changed. That's correct, isn't it?
Ms. Vicario.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, that is correct.
Thanks. I will go to Councillor Pizzi now. I'll give you another chance.
No, it's just one
final question.
Oh, no, it was just saying I will be circulating an alternate just to have some clarification to the text of the reference group, but I'll work with the manager just to try and sort out the best way.
Okay, Councillor Pizzi, any questions on this item?
Yeah, just in regards to the State Planning Policy 2.6 being released, as this document will dictate, really in a sense, what we can and can't do with a CHAR map. What will the CRG be working on in the year leading up to that document being released? What, if the CRG is being set up before that document's available, what does the city perceive them to be working on in that period?
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. So the committee reference group would be working on the communications and engagement strategy, which council has asked to be prepared. So we'd like the community reference group to have input into that. The other big body of work that council requested was research into alternative coastal protection measures. So the reference group would have input into that as well, as we work through the research and investigation into those matters.
Anything further, Councillor Pizzi?
Does the city perceive that the state planning policy 2.6 in regards to alternative measures, do you think they will have a say on what alternative measures you can and can't use?
Ms. Macario.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It's difficult for us to comment on what the review of the state planning policy will contain. We haven't been engaged as yet. But it's likely it would be the technical requirements for things such as the coastal hazard assessments. In past reviews, that's the items that have been updated, which inform the development of the CHAR map through those assessments. I don't think it would prohibit us looking at any of the alternatives that we could put in place.
Councillor Pizzi, any further questions?
I just wonder, will the CRG still be functioning post this document released to ensure outcomes of any new CHAR map will be discussed in length by the CRG? So once the planning policy is 2.6 is re-released, will the CRG still be functioning to comment on that document?
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. The intention of the community reference group was to be established to guide the development of the CHAR map. We've set it out for a period of 3 years or until that CHAR map has been endorsed by council. So depending on the timeframes for when the state planning policy was released, if it's within the timeframes that council had specified for us to have the group in place, then yes, the group would be able to provide input through the city, but it would also depend on what kind of consultation that the state was going to undertake in terms of the review of the policy.
Sorry, can I have one more question?
One final question, Councillor Pizzi.
Yeah. So could we get costings on what is the financial cost of the CRG in the year leading up to the release of the State Planning Policy 2.6? I think it's really important that the community reference group...
You have your question, I think, Councillor Pizzi.
Oh, yeah, Harriet. Fair enough.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. We did provide those figures previously at the strategy session, so I can circulate the budget broken down into the different years in the briefing pack.
All right, thank you.
That's it, members. Any further questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just a query regarding costing for the facilitator for these meetings and how we got to that figure. It seemed rather sizable. Do we have a breakdown and justification for that level of expenditure? Thanks.
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The figures are based on our current engagement for facilitators for a similar purpose, such as the Strategic Committee Reference Group, and the number of hours that would be required for this group.
Councillor Raftus.
So just for confirmation, it costs us around $10,000 for each information session we run with the facilitator.
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We would be outsourcing all of the work to the facilitator compared to the current approach that we take for the Strategic Community Reference Group, where officers are heavily involved in the development of materials, the agenda, pre-reading materials, and the arrangements for the meeting. For the community reference group for the CHAR map, we would be completely independent and the facilitator would be doing all of that work.
Councillor Raftus. Any further questions on this item?
If not, we'll move on to item 12.8, Corporate Sponsorship Application, Cricket Australia National Indoor Cricket Championships 2025. Collective members, any questions on this item? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. Could I just point out that on page 63, where the comment is pointing out the commercial benefits of sponsorship of sporting, national sporting events, the report mentions the National Basketball League, National Championships and National Bowling Championships, but neglects to mention the Senior Men's and Women's National Lacrosse Championships held at Pennystone Reserve this year. The question is, why do we mention the other two and not that one? Surely it was a big enough event to warrant a mention. Maybe it was just an oversight.
Okay, that's the question. I've got that. Director Perry, if you could answer the question, please.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I think the fact that those two were mentioned relates to the size of the sponsorship that was provided at the time as well and considered to be quite significant. The city has sponsored other sporting events over the time, which I guess each individual sporting league may consider those to be significant as well. So it's not necessarily an oversight. We're just not providing a list of every event that we're doing.
Any further questions, Councillor Chester?
Yes, just to finish off on that. Mr. Perry, are you suggesting that there was no sponsorship of the National Lacrosse event at all?
Take that question through the chair and ask Director Parry to respond. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I don't recall whether we sponsored a national lacrosse event. I know that we did sponsor a lacrosse event quite recently in the past few months, but whether it was a national event, I'm not too sure. So I can take that one on notice just to clarify the event sponsorship that we provided to lacrosse in the past few months.
I'll give you the opportunity, Chester, just to clarify that, if you wish.
It was a national championship.
Thank you. Do you have any further questions? Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Given that the event is over 9 days and will attract an estimated 700 spectators, what's the actual capacity at Bouncers Sporting Centre to accommodate spectators?
Director Parry.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, thank you very much for the question. I've not visited the venue itself, so I'll take that one on notice and be able to provide that information in the pack.
Councillor Fisherick, anything further? Councillors, any further questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Noting that the City of Casey's had these championships previously, do we have any awareness of what level they sponsored the event? Please.
Thank you. Could I just ask you to repeat the city of which I didn't quite catch that?
City of Casey. It's one of the documents that's attached is within the pack promoting the championships.
City of Casey. Director Parry.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Sorry, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Thank you very much for the question, Councillor. I don't have that information on hand, so I will provide that information within the pack for you.
Councillor Raftus, anything further?
Yes, last question. Note within the risk management comment is that the event will proceed regardless of any city funding. Just wondered how that was treated as part of the process of contemplating how much to sponsor the event for.
Director Parry.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, it was just placed within there so that the council had an understanding that that the event wasn't reliant upon the city's funding. However, we still did assess the application against our matrix and arrived at the value of $30,000 for sponsorship, given the economic benefit in the main was at the higher end of the scale that it would bring to the city. However, we do try to look at all events with rigour as to what would be the ramifications or implications of the city not sponsoring an event as well. And to our understanding, the event had already been booked with Bouncers Joondalup up to proceed, but we believe it does present a unique opportunity to support a national event within the city's boundaries.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Do we have any awareness of whether Joondalup Resort or Quest are also sponsoring, given their likelihood of potentially attracting people staying there?
Through to Perry.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, not at this particular time. I know that the administration will work with the event organisers, particularly with regard to accommodation. As to whether those accommodation providers would provide sponsorship to the event organisers, I'm uncertain, but it is something that I could find out for you, and we could put that information within the pack as well.
Anything further, Councillor Rufters?
Yeah, there's a bit of a broad question. When we consider events such as this, do we, as part of our economic development, engage with potential beneficiaries of these events, such as accommodation providers, to say, query as to whether they would perhaps come on board as a joint promotion if we were putting in a $35,000 sponsorship sort, that perhaps it was 15 from us and 10 each from, key providers. Do we consider those sort of arrangements?
Director Perry.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, an interesting way of looking at the sponsorship. However, I guess the applicants are coming to the city with a proposal for us to sponsor them. So our main role is to be able to sponsor the particular event and not spend staffing time looking at how the costs of an event might be offset through other sponsorships. If that was the intent of the council with regard to future sponsorships, then that could be considered as part of the review of the corporate sponsorship policy.
Anything further, Councillor Rufters? Councillors, any other questions? Councillor Hutton.
On the page 59, it says the city will be recognised as the official event partner. Just for clarification on the language there, will we be the one official event partner, or could we be one of many official event partners?
Director Perry.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I believe we will be the one official event partner.
Yeah.
Anything further, Councillor Hunt?
Yeah, it makes reference, obviously, to the event being live-streamed. Now, given the live-streaming seems to be the main way at which this event will be promoted to a broader audience, is there any mechanism for us to make sure that the City of Joondalup is clearly stated on the Facebook post itself or the YouTube post itself as part of the sponsorship?
Director Perry.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I believe the City of Joondalup's logo will be embedded within the streaming itself, but I could seek clarification on that just to confirm.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton?
Yeah. Now, given this is a one-off event that's already confirmed to happen without the sponsorship, could I just get some clarity around what the actual objective is of the city in sponsoring an event like this? What benefit does it offer to ratepayers?
Director Perry.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, there are a range of benefits which are outlined on page 58 of the report. We don't seek to restrict community groups, whether an events, community groups, sporting groups, in applying for sponsorship at the city. So those corporate sponsorship applications tend to achieve those objectives which are placed on page 58 and meet a number of criteria as well. So this application was submitted by the Indoor Cricket National Championships and assessed against those criteria.
Anything further, Councillor Hunt?
Yeah, so just in regards to those timelines, it says creating long-term value to the city and residents. Do we believe that by sponsoring this event that we might be able to foster a long-term relationship with Cricket Australia that would potentially result in events like this coming back to the city in the future?
Director Perry.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I would certainly hope so. If an event is successful and the participants enjoy the surroundings and amenity and the well-being of the City of Joondalup, then I would hope that that applicants would return to the city, not only just in the capacity of their sporting participation, but perhaps visit and tour and tell people about the amenities of the city of Joondalup up to their families and friends to increase economic development here within the city.
Councillor Hutton?
And just a final question, which I'm happy to be taken on notice. Would we be able to get an outline of where this event's been held in the past and whether or not there is a precedent for the event to return to a city multiple times, just to get a full understanding about whether it would reattract, or have the possibility of reattracting the event?
Sure, it's all right.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, we will make contact with the organisers just to find out where perhaps the last 5 or 10 of these have actually been held within Australia. At the top of page 59, we do talk about, I think it's page 59, where the event or similar events have been held within Western Australia. So we'll find out where those national events have been found and put them within the briefing pack for you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Team members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Ventura.
Thank you. Through you, just a couple of quick questions. In the pack, can we just get some clarification on the current social follower numbers of Cricket Australia, in particular Facebook and YouTube?
Professor Parry.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, we can do that.
Okay. Follow-up question?
Yeah, just two more if that's okay. Also, is Cricket Australia for this campaign going to be delivering sponsored posts? And if there are sponsored posts, will the City of Joondalup be featured?
Director Parry.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Thank you for the question. I'll take the one on notice and clarify that one within the pack.
And further question?
Yeah, final question. Just seeking confirmation that there are teams that are going to be actually taking up accommodation in the CBD.
Director Parry.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I can't confirm where people are going to be staying. They will be encouraged to make contact with accommodation providers within the City of Joondalup, and I'm sure that most of those teams will want to be close to the event venue for training and for the events themselves.
Okay. Hello to members. Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just one thing really quickly. Just in relation to the sponsorship there and the agreement, is it possible to have something in the agreement that should this be successful and the city would like to sponsor this event in a future year, that Cricket Australia has, some obligation to seek through us first before deciding to go somewhere else in future years. So we get sort of first pick of the cherry, being that we are obviously putting some money towards it this time.
That's possible.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, an interesting question. It's one that could be raised during the sponsorship negotiations, should this sponsorship be endorsed by the council. I think that one of the objectives of the championships is probably to spread the event throughout Australia, given the number of interstate teams that there are, or the event teams that are spread throughout Australia's continent. So whether they would be amenable to that, I don't know, but it could certainly be raised with them during the negotiations.
Councillors, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.9, a list of payments made during the month of July 2024. Elected members, any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. The first one I have is page 417, which is the legal fees for Thompson Gear. Could we just have an understanding what legal mask those costs relate to? So that's the $1,748.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, we'll take the question on notice and provide the information back.
Thank you. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Could I also get the similar sort of detail for page 421, which is the Douglas MacLeod lawyer's advice and legal services which have been provided? So that's roughly $16,000-$17,000.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, we'll provide that in the packs as well.
Councillor Hutton. Councillor Kingston, sir.
Just trying to find the page. Yes, the town team movement management fee, which is on page 447. Could we have an understanding for the last financial year and to date of this financial year, how much we have
paid to the Tantin movement?
Yes, Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, we can provide that, and in the breakdown we'll include a rough description of what each payment was for.
Yep. Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. And then the LinkedIn Singapore payment for $61,000 for LinkedIn Learning. I know this was in the office of the CEO's briefing a couple of months back. I'm just trying to understand how many staff are taking up the opportunity for training and whether we're circulating that information adequately.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, staff are making the most of the LinkedIn training being provided. It is a very cost-efficient way of providing training on the various technology platforms the city operates, but I will take the question on notice as well and provide further detail on the facts.
Councillor Kingston.
That's all for now. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. I have four requests for clarity. First one on page 380. For a grated cover with a lock, $13,000. Now, I just want to know if that is just for one grate cover or multiple covers.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, at that expense, I would suggest it also includes supply and installation and associated works, but I'll take the question on notice and provide the details on Friday.
Councillor Chester.
Yes, I just point out that it says grated cover and it doesn't have an S on it, so that's my assumption there. Also on the same page, AutoCAD license fee, $31,000. I'm just wondering, is that surely not for 1 year? It must be for an extended period.
That's a Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I would suggest it is for 1 year. CAD software is extremely expensive, but again, I'll take the question on notice and provide the number of seats the city buys licences for and the duration of the licence.
Councillor Chester.
Yes, and continuing on page 383, reinstatement of painted curb numbers, 101,000? How many numbers were repainted? Surely it's a lot.
Fritz Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I will take that one on notice and provide further details in the pack, but at the observation on the listing, I would suggest to you that is the first line of the invoice that's been entered. And the lines further down the invoice will be things like the curbing works and the removal and reinstatement of the curbs.
Councillor Chester.
Yes, on the following page, 384, crossover, and it doesn't say crossovers, I point out, Fraser Way Padbury, $107,000. Sure, that's not for one crossover.
Through to Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Again, I would suggest that is for works for a street or a cul-de-sac, but I'll take the question on notice and provide the details.
Lieutenant members, are there further questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Page 382, Andrew Huffer and Associates, $6,300.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Again, I'll take that one on notice and provide details on the page.
Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you. Page 392, Constable Care, $32,500. Just wonder if we can get, as part of that, an update on how active Constable Care is, because I just don't hear it as existing anymore. So just wonder if we can get some background on that one, please.
Dr. Humphrey?
Deputy Mayor, yes, happy to provide that information on the impacts.
Councillor Raftus?
Page 414, Joondalup Business Association, business implementation support measures for
$27,500.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, the City does support Joondalup Business Association providing assistance to its members for various things, cyber awareness, use of social media. I will take that question on notice and provide further information in the case.
Anything further, Councillor Raftus?
Yes, thank you. Page 418, LDISWA, $1.3 million. Assuming it's an insurance renewal, but clarification on that.
Address the Humphrey.
I assume, Mr. Premier, the assumption is correct that it is a part payment for the insurance renewal. In the packs, I'll provide the total renewal cost for our insurance services this year.
Anything further, Councillor Raftus?
No, it just would have been, yeah, I won't. It's not a question, so I'll refrain. Thanks. Thank you. That's it, members. Any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move to 12.10, Financial Activity Statement for July 2024. Councillors, any questions on this item? Councillor Raftis.
Yes, thank you. Deputy Mayor, employee costs over budget. Can we get a full breakdown of those components, please?
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, so we can provide that. Just briefly, the main cost there that's gone over is employee costs at both Craigie Leisure Centre and through the libraries, where we've had higher than expected casual costs, but we'll provide those breakdowns in the packs on Friday.
Councillor Raftis. Thirty members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move to item 12.11, card transactions for the month of July 2024. Director Humphrey, it's a presentation. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just briefly, at the August Ordinary Council meeting, a question was asked on whether prepaid cards should be reported alongside other credit cards, and it was noted during a comment on the same item that it was reasonable to expect that prepaid cards would be caught up in the intent of requirements to report credit card expenditure. The City has reviewed both the question and the comment and agree it is reasonable to expect prepaid cards would be included in the intent of the recent change to legislation. As such, we have included in Attachment 3 the details of expenditure on prepaid cards, and we have updated internal procedures to ensure that all such prepaid cards be reported alongside all other credit cards in the future. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Director Humphrey. Executive members, any questions on this item? Councillor Raftis.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just in terms of following up on the use of the prepaid cards, is that policy likely to continue of using those when cardholders go on leave? Because I note some of those transactions happened in July, whereas others happened in May. So these cards seem to be used for a number of months after someone went on leave.
Director Humphrey.
Mr. Mayor, the prepaid cards would only be used in an instance where the staff member who's the card holder wasn't available or other credit cards weren't able to be used. Our preference would be that in the event the catering card holder wasn't able to attend work, then the person holding the purchasing card would be asked to make the payment. In the event both aren't available, yes, we would use prepaid cards, but it would be considered the last resort. It's not something we would like to be doing too often.
Councillor Raftis.
Thank you. Has the City considered that it might be efficient to have a second catering card for someone in that area if that's an issue that happens regularly? Doesn't need to have a large credit limit.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Mayor, the City has considered that. Our preference is to keep the number of credit cards issued to the City at the lowest possible number, but we are reviewing who holds a credit card to make sure that they are available as and when required.
Councillor Raftis. Councillors, any other questions on this item? If not, we'll move on. So items 12.12 and 12.13 will be moved to the end of the agenda. As I indicated earlier, we'll go to 12.14, the proposed Crown subdivision for Reserve 48922, 15 Southcote Drive, Kinross. Councillors, any questions on this item? I'll ask a question myself. To Mr. Hamling, I wonder if you could just, if you're able to inform us as to how local community members in Kinross will be able to make use and benefit from this facility. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, the whole purpose of this is for those who produce excess solar. Which would go back into the grid, that it will actually, for a small fee, will go back into the battery, and they'll be able to utilise that during the evenings when the grid can't be grid's at its maximum, and provide a more stable power supply through the Kinross.
Thank you. Can I ask if there's an indication of how many Kinross community members might be benefit from access, either input or output, from this community battery? Thank you.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take that on notice and provide the information in the pack.
Thank you. That's it, members. Any further questions on this item? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. I must say that I'm very grateful to see this up and running, as it was a result of my notice of motion. However, a question. As this is the first installation within our city of a community battery, will the city be monitoring its performance in detail so that it can be a standard against which we can measure any future installations?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I do believe that through the federal government initiative that Kinross was the only suburb in the city which was eligible for the battery. But I can actually look at that and see if I can provide you any further information in the pack, Councillor.
Further question, if you will.
Councillor Chester.
But I take it, in spite of that, we will be trying for further funding and installations where possible.
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. That is correct.
Let's see, members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Rafters.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. If this subdivision goes ahead, would the city be, would have otherwise be entitled to rates on this area of land?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It will be through a lease agreement, so the city will be getting an annual fee. I think it was over $3,000 for the actual battery leasing through Western Power.
Councillor Rafters.
Yeah, the question is, would there be rates able to be collected on this area, given that the use it would be undertaken on it?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, we would wait evaluation from the Valuer General's office as to whether for rating purposes. It is possible they will make the decision based on whether or not someone is making a profit or revenue from the use of the land. If that's the case, irrespective of whether it's a lease or a freehold sale of the land, there is the potential for rates to be raised. So I'll take the question on notice and I'll have a closer look at the lease and who will be owning it to make sure there's no rates exemptions for either and write that information in the packs.
Councillor Rafters. Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, thank you. Just in regards to this project, has there been any consultation with the neighbouring properties?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I think in the previous reports there was talk about consultation and the but I will follow that through and provide any information in the pack.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton?
Yeah, just the follow-on question would have been, will there be any notification of the works before they commence?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, there would be.
Thank you. And just in regards to the lot itself, what is the intended purpose of 15 Selkirk Drive?
Thank you, Mr. Hamling. Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The lot at the moment is located in the Kinross neighbourhood structure plan area. Within that structure plan, it identifies the land as community purpose. So there's no specific development outcome that's been identified for it, but the underlying zoning or intent for it is for some sort of community purpose.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton?
Yes. There was obviously some subdivisions which took place in the vicinity. Was those areas also classified as did those areas also have the same classification before they were subdivided?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, and I'm happy to provide the Kinross Neighbourhood Structure Plan in the notes for elected members, but the site where the shopping centre is was identified for that purpose, for a commercial purpose, and within the structure plan there were specific lots identified for specific purposes, so 15 Selkirk, for example, being community purpose, and the shopping centre site for
for that intent as well, but we'll provide the structure plan map for elected members.
Any further questions, Councillor Hutton?
Yeah, just final question. From, I guess, a community purpose perspective, does the city have any plans or any foresight about what that lot may otherwise be used for?
Fritz Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Not at this stage. It's not a lot that the city owns, and therefore we don't have too much control or the ability to dictate the outcome for it. So, yeah, I think the long story short to that is no, we don't have a firm view one way or the other what might be there at this stage.
Thank you.
Thank you. To members, any further questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. Just a quick one in relation to the safety of the batteries. I'm just wondering if there's any sort of plans in place should there be any damage causing explosion from the battery system, and has a consideration been given to protecting, obviously, the residents around and others should that occur?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I have not really received any information on that, so I'll follow up with Western Power and provide them the fact.
Councillor Chester, the second question. I'll just check if anybody else has any questions.
Yes.
Can I just check if anybody else, because I think you've already asked questions. Any elected members wish to ask questions on this item? Okay, Councillor Chester, please go ahead.
Thank you. I noticed in the report that Western Power is categorised as a Category A tenant, and I notice also that this means that they are subject to a commercial and negotiated lease. Does it involve any other condition as a Category A tenant, or is it just because it's subject to the commercial lease?
Let's give Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. As it is a commercial lease, it has got a valuation of $3,000 plus GST, but I will have a look at if there is any other conditions on that lease, Council.
Okay, thank you. Any elected members wishing to ask further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.15, Pedestrian Accessibility and Amenity Improvement Programme. Do any councillors wish to ask questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to... actually, we've finished there the main reports. Just bear with me one moment. Notwithstanding the two items that we're going to defer till the end of the meeting. So we now move on to reports of committees. Yeah, we've got item 13.1.1. Before we start on this, it's a proposed revision to the Alfresco Activities Local Planning Policy and Draft Alfresco Spaces Guidelines. Can I just request Councillor Hutton to, due to his declaration of final interest? Elected members, does anybody have any questions on this item? Last chance. No, we'll get Councillor Hutton back then. Thank you. Members, will continue with item 13.1.2, proposed revocation of Greenwood Local Structure Plan and Amendment to Local Planning Scheme Number 3. Elected members, do you have any questions on this item? Then we'll move on to item 13.1.3, proposed amendments to the Joondalup Design Review Panel Local Planning Policy. Elected members, any questions on this item? Just give Councillor Hutton the opportunity. We're just on item 13.1.3, proposed amendments to the June Top Design Review Panel Local Planning Policy. Does Councillor Hutton have any questions on this item? Thank you. We'll move on to item 13.1.4, proposed parking amendment local law 2024. Elected members, any questions on this item? Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just my question is, when was the last time that we increased modified penalties, and do we need to consider them in the terms of this local law amendment? Thank you.
Director Parry. Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We last reviewed the modified penalties when we last reviewed the parking local law, which was which came to council last year. As part of that, generally we increased fees from $80 to $100 up to $150, and then some up to $200 as well. We also established a three-tier system within our modified penalties. So there was a penalty of $100, if you like, for non-hazardous offences, and then increasing in penalty due to the severity or how hazardous an offence was. So to your question, last year was the last time we reviewed the modified penalty.
Thank you. Any elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we move on to item 13.1.5, disposal of minor surplus assets policy review. Councillors, any questions on this item? If not, we move on to item 13.1.6, specified area rating council policy review. 13 members, any questions on this item? Councillor May.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Just a brief question from me on page 639 of the attachment, which is near the very end. On point two, there's an area highlighted in green, which seems to contradict the point one of the resolution. I'm just wanting to clarify. Point highlighted in green includes and cost of administering the specified area rate. Is the highlighted section included to be deleted, or is it included? Include as a late addition. Thank you.
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I just need to locate the area you're talking on, Councillor. Apologies, it's on the attachment on page 639, near the top of the page on point two, it's highlighted in green.
Have you located it, Mr. Hamlin?
So through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, when we were looking at the and putting the policy and the different and specific guidelines together, we highlighted that we could provide two options. One was with the administration costs in there, and one without. So you'll find a duplicate copy of the guidelines and fuss in there in regards to that.
Thank you. Anything further, Councillor May? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's a brief one. I believe a couple of years ago it was changed that the SARB bodies themselves, so the incorporated associations, were not allowed to manage the funds which were collected under the SARB, but previously they were. Has any thought been given to changing that arrangement so that the SARB associations could directly engage the consultants, sorry, not the consultants, the contractors, as they had done previously?
So
is that a legislative restriction?
So I'll I'll ask Mr. Helming to respond, but please consider the question. I think there were certain things said there that may not be correct. So if you maybe just work on just repeat the first statement you made about 2 years ago, something happened?
I said a couple of years ago it was the case that certain SAR associations were able to directly manage the funds, and the contractors.
Stop there then. So, Mr. Helming, could you just respond to Councillor Kingston if that statement is true?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Going back more than 2 years, it was quite a long time ago, there was one of the SAR suburbs were monitoring their own funds, but then when we changed the policy and reviewed it, it was all brought into line to comply. But to give you the specific details, I will take that on notice. Thank you.
So just for clarification, thanks for clarifying that. And given that statement has been responded to, could you just repeat your follow-up question?
Yes, the following part was that has any consideration been given to that particular SAR group being able to again manage the funds and engage the contractors directly, given that might decrease the administration costs borne by the city?
Mr. Humphrey, Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, the short answer is no. It would be quite difficult to do now with procurement requirements being what they are. The city would be required to be satisfied that the association was best placed to provide the service in order to procure the service from them. So I would consider it highly unlikely that the city would revert to that position.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Just a brief one. Is it possible to give any consideration if there was an ability to amend it? So if the SAR, if they chose to manage their own funds, they could? Or if there's any commentary that could be given on that?
Director Humphrey?
No, through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take the question on notice, but it would be a very difficult thing to achieve and to be satisfied that the city we had sufficient management of the funds collected through rates to allow association to do that. But I'll take the question on notice and give it some thought over the next 24 hours and provide a detailed answer.
Thank you. Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, on the pre-submitted questions to this briefing session from Mary O'Byrne, question 5, I'll just read it so we're all on the same page. It says, the SAR ratepayers seem to be getting great value for their SAR payment, such as increased house prices and more attractive suburbs. Can the City please advise when the City of Joondalup will provide the option of going SAR to the rest of the Joondalup suburbs? I obviously know there's an answer provided about how the process you must go through. Has the City investigated making it easier for suburbs to set up SARs, particularly if they do not have residents' associations readily available to manage the selection and allocation of the funds?
Mr. Hamline.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, the policy is specifically written that for the city to manage the SAR, that we actually do it through the ratepayer associations. They are the voice of the suburb, the area which is within that SAR. It would be very difficult to manage a SAR without having a specific residents group that we could liaise with.
Councillor Hunt.
Would there be any provision in the absence of a SAR, of a residence group for, say, for example, the local ward councillors to assist in such a process? Or even for the election of a special body to represent the suburb as part of local government elections?
Mr. Hamling?
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take that one on notice and provide information to the PAC.
Thank you.
Councillors, any further questions on this item? Councillor Vinciullo.
Yes, through you. Just want a clarification on which SAR was actually self-funded.
Mr. Hamlin.
Yeah, that so through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, that was the Woodvale SAR.
Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. This waiving of the administrative cost was debated at considerable length at the Administration Policy Committee meeting, which I was at. For the benefit of the public, and we do have a member of a SAR in the audience, Mr.
Chester. If you have a question, please, Councillor Chester.
Sorry?
Do you have a question?
I do have a question. I wonder if we could have some elaboration on, from the city, why we were prepared to waive the internal administrative costs. It is a real cost, and the rationale for not including it in the fee really does need to be stated. I wonder if that's possible.
So I'll take it in the context of a question and seek an answer to the question, please.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The administration cost covers specifically the time that officers will be looking at actually managing the SAR in the administration level, which is working through tenders, attending some meetings, liaising with the resident bodies. It does not include what we would be the actual ongoing maintenance. We need to maintain those parks, whether we're in the SAR or not, and those areas would have contractors in them, whether they were a SAR or not, and they would have the same type of management, the supervisor and so forth, managing the performance of that contract.
Any further questions, elected members? Councillor Pizzi.
So when you're talking about the administration cost just now, can you just confirm for me what you're saying essentially is, if the SARS wasn't there, you would still be maintaining that area and those administration costs would still be there whether the SARS was there or not?
I'll take that as a question through the chair. Mr. Hamlin.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, the position is a full-time FTE, of which 25% of their time currently resides in managing the components of the SAR. If that SARS did not exist, the officer's time would be redirected into doing other type of technical officer type work.
Councillor Pizzi.
So if the SARS didn't exist and you still had the areas to maintain, those areas would still need to be managed by administration, is that correct?
I'll take that as a question through the chair. Mr. Hamling.
Yep, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, for clarity, yes, they would. There is a component of supervision and contract management of contractors who work in there, and that would have to be undertaken. The scope might be different. The actual levels of mowing, landscape maintenance, and so forth would be different, but they would still have a contractor in there mowing, landscaping, etc.
Councillor Pizzi, any further questions through the chair?
Okay, so there'd still be administrative costs to the area. Can we get a comparison of what that cost would be if the SARS wasn't there to if it is there?
Take that as a question through the chair, Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Currently, when we deliver the annual service agreement to the SARS, there is a difference between what the service level that the city would provide and what the SAR scope would be. The SAR pays for that difference. The city pays for the remainder, and I can provide you that cost, no problem at all.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi. Let's see, members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Through you. The rationale from the SAR groups for the city not to levy these, listed on page 152. Just wondered if the administration could identify what were the key influences amongst those to reverse its view on charging recouping an administration cost.
So I'll take the question to Mr. Hamling. I'm not sure which did you say reversing opinion, or what was the wording used there?
Yeah, in February this year, they were supportive of recovering a cost, and September, the administration not supportive. So just wondering, the influences from the of those items, what were the key influences to change that position?
Thanks for clarifying the dates. Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. When the policy went to council last, we were asked to consult with the residents' associations. We had a meeting with all the associations in the room, and we talked through
the benefits of the SARs. They provided us with the information in and that's provided within the report and as attachments on the benefits that they perceive the SAR to be, not only to their only residents, to the surrounding residents who use the facilities. And that was clarified or quantified and asked to be quantified by the real estate agents that might be able to provide anecdotal information that the city actually recoups more than what the expenditure would be through higher rates. Another consideration was that with the maturity of the agreements, the city has built up a very good will with the actual resident association, and that the city officers can actually work really well in keeping the SARs in a pristine area and in a pristine condition, and that was one of the other considerations.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Did the administration do any work to confirm the figures that have been quoted by the SAR groups in their response?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, no, it was anecdotal evidence that they provided.
Councillor Raftus.
Has the city changed its view on recouping costs from any particular group of residents based on anecdotal evidence in the recent history?
Could you just repeat the question, please?
I'll rephrase it. Are there any other examples in recent history where the city has changed its, reversed its view on recovering costs from a group of residents based on anecdotal evidence provided by those residents?
Mr. CEO.
Thank you, through you, presiding member. Councillor Raftus, to take that question on notice.
Councillor Raftus, anything further?
Thank you. Can we have the city review the statement in the SAR group response around the $700,000 of additional rates generated by the SAR groups? I just want to ensure it has some facts to it as not a figure that's based for conjecture.
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We'll take that on notice and provide the information in the pack.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Just a flag. I'll be moving an alternate that the city go back to the previous stance and does recoup an administration charge. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, councillors? I'll just check if anybody hasn't asked a question yet. Okay, just one moment. Okay, Councillor Chester.
I'm sorry, I was asking whether you acknowledge me or not. Could I beg your indulgence before we move on to...
If you have a question, you may.
Before we go on to the CEO's report, I beg your indulgence and ask to go back to 12.12.
We'll consider that in a moment, but we're still on this current item. We haven't finished yet. Elected members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Raftus, on this item?
Yes, on this item. Could please. Could we confirm that in the budget process in early months of 2023 that there was a breakfast held specifically for the SAR groups for input into budget, and as far, was there one held in 2024?
Thank you. Mr.
Hamlin? Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. There is a budget, or there is a budget breakfast workshop that the mayor organises with all the invites the residents association, which the SAR groups are included in. The only other all the groups have been together was the one that was earlier this year. There was just the SAR groups based on the previous report to council, which requested we consult with the groups in regard to the fee.
Councillor Rogers.
Thank you. I'll seek clarification. Was there a specific breakfast held for the SAR groups on the 31st of January 2023? And then again on 21st of February 2023, there was an entire ratepayers group breakfast, of which the SAR groups were invited again. So based on that, was there a similar structure in 2024?
Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'll take that on notice and ensure that we check the dates to make sure that the information is relevant.
Thank you. Okay, I think we've all had the chance to ask questions on this item. Just for the benefit of Councillor Chester, I have sought some clarification on the matter. And given this is a briefing session, really we do like to move on, but you're welcome to submit your further questions in writing or indeed at the Council meeting next week.
Sorry, I thought that one was coming up as confidential at the end. I thought that's what was said at the beginning because I wanted to ask the questions.
I haven't given you the call, Councillor Pitty, but I've mentioned multiple times tonight that there are two confidential items that we'll be dealing with at the end of the agenda tonight. They haven't been forgotten.
Point of order.
Chester.
I've always understood that if we inadvertently missed an item, that we had an opportunity to go back.
I'll seek further clarification from Governor. Thank you. I had further advice from Governance that if you just remind us, please, Councillor Chester, of which item you overbooked to mention at the time.
It was 12.12. It's to do with the...
That is a confidential item. We haven't got there yet, Councillor Chester. We haven't reached that item. We're doing that at the end of the session.
Okay.
I've mentioned that several times tonight. We're still on reports of committees, and that concludes the items listed on the agenda. Mr. CEO, are there any reports from committees? Any further?
At this stage, no.
Thank you. We now move to item 14, reports of the Chief Executive Officer. Mr. CEO, are there any reports from the CEO?
The following additional report will be listed in the Council agenda for next week's meeting, and that is a confidential item relating to a director's employment contract renewal.
Thank you. Next item is urgent business. This item will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on the 17th of September. The next item is 16, motions of which previous notice has been given. We've received two notices of motion from Councillor Kingston, and these will be included in the agenda of the September ordinary council meeting. Next item 17, announcement of notices of motion for the next meeting. This item will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on the 17th of September 2024. We now move back to the two agenda items that were deferred to the end of the agenda. First item is item 12.12, invitation. Okay, just one moment. So given these confidential items, we will clear the gallery. Thank you. So a reminder to elected members with these items, generally speaking, they're confidential if you wish to ask questions regarding the confidential attachments. But we've moved it to the agenda of the item, so it's much easier to deal with it now. We'll just wait for the gallery and the staff to clear. I'm just waiting for confirmation from the administration. Yep. So as I was saying, so these items are really only confidential if elected members wish to ask questions on the confidential attachments. It's just more convenient to move it to the end of the meeting. In case any elected members do have any questions on confidential items, so feel free, elected members, Any questions on these items? Councillor Chester.
Yes, I apologise for my slip-up. You did mention it. Okay. I'm looking at attachment 12.12.1 on page 498 of the attachments. Oh, okay.
And do you have a question, Councillor Chester?
I do, for these 31
speakers. Point of order.
Yeah. Yes, I think administration is aware. As I've mentioned, we only move to confidential if there's a question on the confidential attachments, so I'll check with administration. Has Councillor Chester indicated his question is relating to confidential attachments?
Will I continue then?
Yep. Yep, you may go. Yep, that's right.
Okay, page 495 of the attachments to the agenda. I'm looking at a list of the 31 species. The question is, and I apologise to the manager of infrastructure who's...
Point of order, Mr. Mayor, there's a person entering the chamber.
Sorry,
and we're in confidential.
I did answer that question already, but I'll go back to governance. Would you like to answer that question again, Mr. CEO?
Yeah, my understanding is that the item is regarded as confidential if questions are being asked by elected members in relation to any confidential attachment. My understanding is that the attachment that's currently the subject of a question is not confidential. I will double-check with governance. Yeah, my understanding is correct. So it is not currently a confidential part of the meeting, and I apologise for any confusion that may have arisen.
Thank you. That's the same answer I gave just a few moments ago. Councillor Chester, please.
Thank you. This tree stock, which is listed on page 495, 31 species, I'm requesting some feedback on what percentage of those listed will be considered foraging for black cockatoos. And as I said previously, the manager of infrastructure has been under some questioning, and I apologise for this one too.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Very happy to take that question on notice and provide the information in the packs.
Thank you. Team members, any further questions on this item without going into confidential details of the attachments? Councillor Pizzi.
I do have a question, but the confidential attachment was not made available to myself as I don't get it in the pack, and it's not actually on the elected members. Is it? Well, I can't see it. I'm looking at it now. So.
Okay, so just one moment. Just ask governance to comment on that.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Confidential attachment 12.12.3 is the confidential attachment. I'm looking at it now, so I'm assuming that most other elected members have it.
Is it in the briefing session notes? Online? I can't see it, so I'll ask later to be shown that. So I'm going to ask a question. I don't know if it's provided to me already or in that confidential section. I don't think it is because it's available in the notes. What I'm asking is sorry, I'm just going back to my notes now. As part of, where is it? Sorry. Can I just get some clarification on the table you show on page 82? Just to confirm the charges per tree, is it about $2,000? It's not very clear on what items, it's not very clear to me what that means.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, we can provide a breakdown of the trees. The way we assess attendance is we take all the applications to join the panel. In this particular circumstances, we take a sample of what we think we would order in a typical year and apply that, and there can be a fair variation in the trees individually, depending on the species and the size, but I'm happy to provide that information to elected members.
Thank you. And just for your information, I've checked my electronic copy of the agenda for tonight, and I see the confidential attachment.
Okay.
Do you have a further question, Councillor Pizzi?
Have we ever worked with other schools in relation to planting seedlings and growing trees for the city for the purpose of planting them to save money and bring the community along?
Director Humphrey.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take the question I notice. I believe we have worked with schools with regards to tree planting. The issue the city has is the sheer number of trees that we're looking to purchase in any given year and plant would require a commercial operator. whether we could in future involve schools and get the trees from schools or community groups is a good question. We'll take on notice and provide information.
All right.
Councillor Pizzey.
That was it. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hutton.
Given we are, through you, presiding member, given we're currently in a quarantine zone for the relocation of organic matter and tree plants, are any of these nurseries affected by that quarantine zone?
Mr. Hamlin, or Director Humphrey? Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Both nurseries are in Wanneroo, and at the moment they're in the same zone as us, so they can transfer stock backwards and forwards with no problems.
Anything further, Councillor Hunt?
Yeah. Is there a contingency plan for the instance where we end up in separate quarantine zones, or is that covered at all in the contract?
Mr. Hamlin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, it's not covered in the contract, Councillor. The polyphagous shuttle board is a bit of a moving feast at the moment, and I'm sure there would be different rules for contract growers and how they manage their stock, which would be different to residents moving green stock around. But we get more information, more clarity from DPIRD in that regard.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton?
Yeah, final question. As part of the matrix, do we test for the ability of the nurseries to screen for the spread of these types of viruses or pests?
Good to have
you. Mr. Deputy Mayor, we don't screen per se, but it's a requirement of the tender they provide certification that they are provide the trees requested. Subject to all the laws that they're currently obliged to follow, but we don't specifically go out and do our own checks. We rely on the assessments that they provide.
And sorry, just one final question on that. In the instance where we were to receive a tree which was infested, would there be any mechanism for the city to take... obviously, there would be a massive cost involved in rectifying that situation. Would there be any mechanism for the city to take to recoup costs?
Director Humphrey?
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, there would be several courses of action the city could take to recover not only the cost of the tree that was infested, per se, but also the damages that the city incurred as a result of that contract.
Councillors, any further questions on this item? Councillor Chester?
Yes, thank you. I noticed in the report that the two tenders were 18% higher than the current rate that the city's paying. And I'm wondering if anyone from the city actually inquired with the tenderers, either of them, how they could justify that increase considering CPI has only been 3.8.
Director Humphrey.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, the city did make reasonable inquiries with the price increase. There are two factors that are affecting tree prices at the moment. One is the number of trees that are being purchased, in particular by local governments and developers. Trees have become very much in-demand products, which allows the nurseries to charge higher prices. And the second issue is that the nurseries themselves are also experiencing higher labour costs, which is one of their main cost factors.
Thank you. Heritage members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move to item 12.13, tender 1924, bulk furniture and white goods collection and processing services. Once again, this item is only confidential if we've got questions on the confidential attachments. Elected members, any questions on this item? Councillor Hutton.
I'm not sure if this will fall under that criteria, but I'll ask the question and I'll let you determine. Obviously, the recommendation, if I'm right in reading this, is for the more expensive of the two tenders. For that additional cost, what additional services are the city getting, and happy for it to be provided on notice?
Director Humphrey.
It's you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'll take that question on notice so I can provide the appropriate detail.
Thank you. Anything further, Councillor Hunt? Any other questions on this item, what's your members? If not, that concludes our business for this evening. That concludes tonight's briefing session. I hereby close the meeting at 9:19 p.m. Thank you and good evening.